I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. The number of Americans in or nearing retirement age is expanding rapidly. One hopes that retirees will remain healthy and active. But where will they live when they get even older? Will they spend the rest of their lives in places like Arizona or Florida, or can we keep them happy and healthy in Kansas City? This hour, why aging is not about time and the body, but about place and relationships. Coming up, what makes a place well-suited for post-retirement living. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Up to date. I'm Steve Kraske. 30 years from now, Kansas City is going to look a whole lot more like Florida, at least when it comes to our demographics. Just a few years ago, we had about 200,000 of our residents age 65 and older. By 2030, that number will have doubled. One issue here is how do we adapt? How do we make the Kansas City area more elder-friendly? On the table are questions about housing, about transportation, and of course, about medical care. With us today is Philip Stafford. He's the author of the book Elderburbia, Aging with a Sense of Place in America. He also is a professor at Indiana University, and he directs the Center on Aging and Community at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community. And Phil, nice to have you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Kansas City. I appreciate it.
Gene Stafford's also here. He's retired from the Kauffman Foundation. He's a member of the Heartland Engagement Initiative, which focuses on aging-related issues throughout the Kansas City region. Gene, nice to have you, too.
Thank you, Steve.
Good morning. Well, Phil, you write in your book that the suburbs are not a very good place to grow old, and yet more seniors live there than in cities and in towns combined across this country. Why is that? If suburbs aren't such a great place for the elderly, why do so many of them live there?
Well, it's because that's where they settled. And after World War II, we had obviously the baby boom occur, and there was a great shift in the population towards suburbs, which didn't exist before that, but in any substantive way. But quickly arose, we always hear about Levittown, you know, the original suburb. And the mindset in the development of these communities was that this is a place where you'll raise your family, and we were also coming off of a period in our land use decision making that was wanting to get away from traditional communities that where industry would be close to where people lived, and so we developed zoning patterns that separated where people worked from where people lived, and the suburbs is where people lived. And so we have these pockets that separate these important functions of life, working and shopping and school and residence. And if you're an older person, you've grown old in the suburb, the children have grown old and left, and we have suburbs that are what we call naturally occurring retirement communities, mm-hmm. where there's a large percentage of older people. Without a lot of support, and the physical design of these places makes it difficult for municipalities to provide public transportation and various public services.
I was going to say buses don't run into cul-de-sacs very often.
They can't turn around.
Yeah.
And many of them in more recent years are built without sidewalks. You walk in the street. The houses are set back from the street without porches, so people are kind of isolated inside of their houses. Mm-hmm. If they can't really get out, it can be a very isolating environment for older people. And so we're going to have to figure out a way to retrofit the suburbs because most people want to stay put. They don't want to move in old age.
Gene Wilson, I gather that a lot of seniors in the Kansas City area are living in the places that Phil just described.
Only scratching the surface.
Yeah.
But go back to Phil's comment. I think at the turn of the war, right after World War II, you have to remember public policy that encouraged this as well. You had VA loans. Mm-hmm. You had FFA loans to try to encourage the vets that were coming home from World War II to buy their own homes. And the ordinances that existed in the cities really promoted that. So that's all a part of what we are facing today.
And so the challenge is what? To reverse that? To change that somehow, Gene?
I don't think that'll happen immediately. But I think density has to be an issue as we look forward. And remember, this is an emerging issue.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about the situation that's today, but if you look at the people who are turning 65 at the rate of 10,000 every day for the next 20 years, we have time now to plan and to think about the implications of this aging population that will double. In Johnson County, that increase will be 148% over 20 years. In Jackson County, where there are already a large number of seniors, it'll be 86%.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a chance to think about this and to reflect on the zoning and the planning that existed to allow what we have right now and maybe a reconsideration of some of those policies going forward to get ready.
But, Phil, this is going to be an awfully tough nut to crack, though, right? Because one of the themes of your book is that older folks, younger folks for that matter, get attached to their homes. They want to stay where they are. If they're living in the suburbs now, what does that portend for the future when, if Gene's right, we're better off if we compact ourselves a little bit, but what if folks don't want to move?
Well, I agree. It is going to be tough because many of the baby boomers already live in the suburbs themselves because the second generation sort of followed that pattern. There is a trend that's beginning to be demonstrated that sees urban environments as a more attractive living environment, and this is true not only for 20-somethings, but for empty nesters and younger members of the retirement population who mm-hmm. are looking for a more urban environment. So I think there will be some relocation back to the center, and we need to find ways to reverse the incentives that used to exist for suburbanism and think about incentives for urbanism, if you will. And there may be urbanist solutions to some of these environments where mm-hmm. we can retrofit. And there are examples of suburban communities where they've taken a mall, a traditional big old mall with huge, parking space, vast amounts of parking, and re-intensified the development in a mall to include affordable housing, to mm-hmm. include basic retail services that people need to provide access to fresh food and those kinds of things.
You know, Gene, in the Kansas City area, are we seeing much move to the core among our seniors? Are seniors beginning to gravitate towards downtown Kansas City or downtown Kansas City, Kansas? What are we seeing?
We went downtown just last Friday night to see a concert at the Midland, and the place is crawling with 20, 30-somethings.
Yeah.
It's not seniors
are
downtown. In fact, I would guess that given the congestion of traffic and parking down there, seniors would avoid that assiduously.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're not seeing it.
No, not at all. And the advent of the Cosentino Market downtown to service the people that are going into the lofts tends not to be the population group that we're talking about in the engagement program.
Can you see that changing down the road as Phil talks about this need to consolidate more in Kansas City, or is it just not part of the culture here?
My guess is that all research says people do want to age in place. The last thing people want to do is to move out of their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
They've been there. It's a part of them. It's their footprint. And they want to be carried out in the casket, okay? But that doesn't mean that they're all going to flood back downtown. Time may come where it's just too much for them to stay in the house that they've got.
So bottom line, then, is we got a big problem here.
Yes,
we
absolutely.
Have seniors staying in their homes, understandably, yes. perhaps, and services to them are tough to reach, tough to get out to them, right?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there are no economies of scale. You know, if the population is spread out over the landscape, then it's not an efficient way to provide services. If people are obviously logically more concentrated, then you can provide those services more effectively mm-hmm. and more efficiently. So it's still worthwhile.
I gather, Phil, there's nothing unique or unusual about Kansas City compared to other cities around the country, or is there?
Well, I don't know really the answer to that question. I think that cities go through phases where they become popular to young people, and sort of Atlanta went through that phase and is kind of leaving it now, and Portland is probably still in that phase. I don't know about Kansas City where you are on that, but places become, you know, cool camp places to be and attract a lot of young people. And so, you know, it may be moderated at some point. But there's downtown, and there's also just the idea of urban places. And I think a lot of small towns throughout the Midwest have an urban core, if you will, even though it may just be a main street with core neighborhoods around it. And increasingly there are baby boomers who have the capability of moving because maybe they have businesses that are not place-based, and so they're looking for a high quality of life in a town. It might be a college town, more likely a college town than some other town. But these become attractive retirement destinations. And, you know, I probably agree with you, Gene, that it's going to be a trickle maybe for a long time.
But you'll remember just a couple of weeks ago, Kansas City was in the top 10 in the HIP Index. I don't know what publication that was.
Is that right?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Kansas City.
Yes, and the things where we scored down are the things that we always score down in every such evaluation, and that's in transportation. Mm-hmm. Okay, but for other than that, it's the HIP Index. And I think that Kansas City is somewhat ahead of some of these other places, many other places, because of the work we're trying to do right now to increase awareness about the age wave that's coming. And we're trying to work with opinion leaders. The Mid-American Regional Council has now decided to take this on as a priority. They work in, as you know, two states, nine counties, and 120 cities in the metro area. And the fact that the elected officials may not be hearing this from their constituents today, given Mark's leadership and given the effort we've made to try to increase awareness about what will happen with this age wave, then I would hope that Kansas City is a little bit ahead of some of the other places.
Is it hard to wake up government officials to what's coming, Gene, because it's not here yet? It's out in the distance, and people don't really respond until they've got to respond kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely. But I made a presentation in to the Northeast Johnson County Chamber of Commerce about a month ago, And that's basically the first ring suburbs in the metro area.
That's where I live.
And I was surprised that the persons who sponsored that luncheon were a small business that provides caregiving to boomer parents who are now trying to help their elderly parents. And I was stunned to discover that there are 60 such businesses in the county, in Johnson County. So it's starting.
60-some businesses that cater to
that provide caregivers for boomers who are trying to care for elderly parents.
Wow, yeah. 60. And those businesses do things like what?
They'll recruit people who are willing to go in and stay with an elderly person, provide for shopping needs, take care of housekeeping, things like that during the day, sometimes around the clock. An issue is that we're so woefully inadequate in terms of the number of caregivers that are necessary for families. Most families deal with that themselves. They can't afford to contract for some person to come in. As a result, the number one thing of boomers who are caring for elderly parents is depression because of the stress of having to do that.
You know, my life is not an example for anyone else's life, but I'll tell you, when I left college and moved to Freeport, Illinois, my first newspaper, I stayed with Marv Messing, who was mid-80s and needed someone to live with him for a while. I was broke, and this guy provided me a great deal. I got free room in the house. Didn't have to do a whole lot of work. Went shopping for him once a week and helped him around the house. He went to bed at 7 o'clock every night, and I had the run of the place to myself. And I got myself on the ground, my feet on the ground financially, and things were great. I've always been surprised that that kind of thing hasn't taken off more, because for me it was such a positive experience and really, really got me going again, Phil.
Yeah, I think that I hesitate to frame this too much in catastrophic terms, because a lot of the people that are being hired in these caregiving agencies are older people themselves, and so they're a very active part of the labor of the workforce, and the contributions that they make to the to their communities in retirement are hugely significant. They get on boards. Their philanthropic work is significant. They provide millions of hours of child care still to their families. And so it's a huge asset as well as being a challenge for communities. And it's important to keep that in mind.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. This morning we're talking about our aging population and how we're going to care for those folks, and even more, how we're going to make the Kansas City area more elder-friendly in the years to come. If you'd like to join our conversation, we'd like to have you. We want to know, what does the Kansas City area need to do to prepare for the coming wave of senior citizens? How ready is this area for the senior population to come, and how accommodating is it for seniors? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. What do you want to see Kansas City do to better prepare itself and make itself more accommodating for our seniors? 816-235-2888. Let's go to Bill from Grandview. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. Fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
We do have a couple of parents who are both disabled. Johnson County does have a marvelous program helping out for assistance there. But I guess my question comes to, I'm in the building material business. I myself am 62. And as we start to, at some point, I'm not going to want to mow my grass. And I don't have a big house. I got a little ranch. And I'm going to want to be able to travel to go to the grocery store in a much more convenient way. But as we move back into this high-density population, what are we going to do about the infrastructure? I mean, we know that the water and sewer system in Kansas City, Missouri, is just, it's just antiquated.
Right.
And several of the surrounding suburbs are in the same situation. So if there's any shift in this fluctuation, is there just going to create another calamity? I mean, is it just going to be something else with a different demand and people not being able to respond to it?
You're on, Phil.
Well, I'm certainly not an expert in public infrastructure, but I think it is a reality that we have disinvested in the centers of our towns and cities in order to underwrite growth on the margins, and that, again, we're coming back to pay for that. And I don't think that reinvesting in the core is necessarily a bad investment. I think it's a good use of public funding, and I think there probably are tools that could shift the investment strategy back to the center, if you will, that would benefit us and allow us to reinvigorate, the urban centers of our cities and towns.
Well,
and again, I'm not just talking about Kansas City. I'm talking about small towns as well.
I concur. And I guess my question is, as you speak of a trickle movement, because not everybody's going to pick up and move right away, because, number one, not everybody can just deinvest themselves of the assets they have, particularly if they own their own houses. That's going to take a long time simply because they're just not as liquid as they used to be. But at some point, I mean, we've got to have, it's like Arizona. Everybody laughed about the Arizonas when they were building up those little communities where people could drive golf carts around. There's no place in Kansas City, and I drive all the highways. I mean, I'm a salesman. I'm out on the roads all the time. There's no place that you could get a group of people who just want to get in their golf cart and go to the grocery store and come back. You're going to get ran over.
Gene, you're nodding your head.
Well, you'll remember a couple of years ago the Metcalf plan in Overland Park to try to rejuvenate the Metcalf Street strip. Mid-American Regional Council presented a plan that called for more density with residences over retail, and you'll remember that the city council didn't accept that very well.
Mm-hmm.
They denied that was an option for Overland Park looking forward. So this is going to be a very, very difficult sell in terms of infrastructure, in terms of what we have done for the past 50 years and to try to change. And hopefully we'll think about it enough so that by the time the surge does hit us, we will have prepared and we can begin to deal more with these things in a different way.
But how optimistic are you about that, Gene? Because we've been talking, as long as I've been doing this radio program, and 20 years before that, we've been talking about the need for density in one part of our metro area or another, and it hasn't happened. Not even close.
I'm not optimistic.
Yeah.
But I'm more optimistic now that the Mid-America Regional Council has decided to make this an issue.
Yeah.
Because I think that'll elevate it on the agenda. I think we'll consider the options, the positives, the negatives if we don't. And hopefully elected officials will begin to get that message.
You know, the two of you spoke at a conference this morning, The New Culture of Aging, Improving How We Live and Age in Greater Kansas City. It was sponsored by MARC, the Mid-America Regional Council, the Center for Practical Bioethics, Nonprofit Connect, and other groups. And one of the speakers this morning was John Carney, head of the Center for Practical Bioethics, who talked about his concerns about sprawl.
That's not going to be an easy task, especially in the challenges that we face in an area where urban sprawl and cheap land keeps pushing the boundaries out. We cannot create sustainable infrastructures by building more roads and more cul-de-sacs and, you know, more areas that are separated from where people want to be and share their lives.
That's the concern.
And the availability of cheap land just exacerbates that whole problem.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think it was a coincidence that there was a fellow that came up afterwards after my talk that was involved with the peak oil issue, and because clearly the sprawl pattern is dependent, an auto-dependent lifestyle, and
yeah.
That may be one of the limiting factors that causes some change.
A lot of cars in Kansas City, Phil, no question about
Try to get transportation on the agenda, though.
Yeah. Mark from Shawnee. Mark, you're on UpToDate. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment. I remember last month or ago, maybe 2 months ago, the Kinsey Star did a two-day series on the aging in suburbs. Mm. And it was, you know, the comments were, you know, people want to stay where they, you know, where they live. You know, they've got their houses. They're comfortable. They don't necessarily always want to be grouped into, you know, or isolated into certain areas, that, you know, they want to continue living throughout their community. And, you know, the other thing is that whatever issues that you have for the aging also help people with disabilities. I'm disabled myself, and, you know, I know that a lot more public transportation, you know, more accessible housing or whatnot would make it dense, or, you know, immensely easier for me to live.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mark, I appreciate the comments, and I'm still hearing this tug of war in our conversation here this morning, gentlemen, between this idea of folks who want to stay in their home and the need for greater density, and you just wonder how that's going to play out. It's hard for city planners to forecast, you know, needs for the elderly, if there is this trend in America that folks want to stay in their own homes.
Well, let me clarify a little bit. We tend to frame these discussions around the frail elderly.
Mm-hmm.
Only 20% of this number will be frail elderly. Only 20% will ever require any kind of institutional care, like a nursing home or assisted living or whatever. 80% of this increasing population of over 65 will be vigorous. They're better educated, they're healthier, they're better off economically, and they're much more politically active than any generation before them.
So they are or are not more inclined to want to move to a more dense living environment.
They will be able to live in their own homes. They will be able to stay where they are. I think mm-hmm. medical service delivery will change. I think.
But if that's the case, then how do city planners go about this task of beginning to prepare for this wave of elderly folks, if the thinking is that most of these folks will want to stay where they're living now, which is in the suburbs?
And I think they probably will be able to stay in the suburbs, but the suburbs will likely have to change some way.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, instead of building a neighborhood around a shopping mall, we hear now that neighborhood might be built and converted the shopping mall to a health services center.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
And it's far out. It's way out. But it's the kind of thing that needs to begin to get in the discussion so we can think about the policies necessary to make those changes.
Let's go to Kite Singleton, who's an advocate for transportation in this community. Kite, good morning.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be back with you. I think you're right on target again with this conversation. It seems to me that if you look at the rationale for Mark's Outlook 2040 part of those recommendations were not established at MARC. They were established in some of our suburban communities that have seen the desire for housing that is smaller lots, smaller houses, and in clusters that may be close to some kind of mixed use, some kind of commercial, so that people don't have to drive a long way every time they need to go do something. Mm-hmm. So I think that exists in our suburban communities as well as in Kansas City, Missouri.
Well, Kite, how people
are looking for those opportunities.
Kite, how well positioned are the suburban communities, though, to go ahead and make this transition? I'm thinking about some of the smaller towns in Northeast Johnson County where I live, very small municipal governments, not really, you know, you wonder how capable they are of dealing with these kinds of serious transitions.
Well, I don't think they're without the ability to do that, Steve. And I think in many cases they have. And I think that those kinds of changes are not being generated necessarily out of those small governments, but they're being generated in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Because real estate developers are looking at these opportunities at cluster housing, smaller housing, and so forth. And I think when you look at the potential for something like the Jackson County rail transit proposal, those are going to some of these smaller towns, Blue Springs,
right,
Pleasant Hill, and so forth. And those communities are interested. Look, Blue Springs has done a plan for how their downtown can redevelop around the transit stop.
Mm.
So that's part of what the Kansas City Regional Transit Alliance is working on with Jackson County and also with the City of Kansas City and the Downtown Council and others, trying to get a more robust transit service into place, mm-hmm, so that we can respond not just to elderly and retiring, but to others as well. Now, Steve, you don't know that I'm an old man myself. I know you don't know that. But my wife and I, about 6 years ago, made a change from a five-bedroom, 3,100-square-foot house to a two-bedroom, one-story, 1,900-square-foot house. And I think people in my category, over 70, can find what, as your guest said, many of them are robust. I don't know if I'm robust, but I'm fairly healthy. And we made that change because we saw the potential for us not being able to climb stairs and do other things. And so I think that's what's happening.
Kite, I'm really glad you called. I appreciate the phone call. Gene, hop in here.
Well, earlier in this conversation, Phil mentioned naturally occurring retirement communities. I'll contend that the first-ring suburbs and in the urban core, we have already here naturally occurring retirement communities.
In what sense?
In the sense that they're older homes. They're homes where the owner has lived for a number of years. They're not being displaced or gentrified by a younger population. The term NORC, N-O-R-C, Naturally Occurring Retirement Communities, came from Manhattan, where there's very high density. But we have them also, but they're single family. And it's where lots and lots of older people live in a neighborhood. And I think our elected officials can begin to think differently about the kind of services that those groups need and allow those people to stay in their homes.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here about elder-friendly communities. And we'll talk with Phil a little bit about one of the main ideas in his book, which is that the aging is not just about time and the body, but it's about place and relationships. We'll get him to explain a little bit more about what he means by that. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Should UMKC change its name to the University of Kansas City? You'll find our talk about it as well as our conversation about information obesity at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, the politics and possibilities of streetcars in Kansas City. And also Dee Snider, the one-time lead singer of Twisted Sister, speaks tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. He has a new book out, Shut Up and Give Me the Mic, and it's not your typical rock memoir. Call Rainy Day Books and Fairway for a ticket at 913-384-3126. We're going to talk to Dee this evening, and we'll air that conversation soon. Why not, right, Dee? Dee Snider of Twisted Sister. We're always going for variety here on Up Today. This hour, we're talking about elder-friendly communities, folks who may not be listening to Twisted Sister these days. With us is Phil Stafford. He's the author of the book Elderburbia, Aging with a Sense of Place in America. And Gene Wilson, retired from the Kauffman Foundation. He's a member of the Heartland Engagement Initiative, which focuses on senior-related issues. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. You know, Gene, when you spoke today at this conference sponsored by MARC, the New Culture of Aging, there was some information given out about a new survey that compares, you know, living quality, living satisfaction in Overland Park versus, I think, downtown Kansas City. What did that survey disclose?
Yes, Dr. Brett Never at the Block School had some of his graduate students, master's degree students, go out and actually interview seniors, and these were people in their late 70s, 80s, in terms of their feelings of isolation. And it was surprising results that the people in the inner city felt much less isolated because they were closer to and had neighbors that watched over them. They didn't feel as isolated as the elders who were in the suburbs. They didn't have contact with their neighbors. They didn't have family around that look after them. One woman said that she could go out her front door and see the pharmacy sign, but it was so far away she couldn't get there, and that there was nobody to help her get the services and the groceries and the things like that that she needed. She's in a beautiful house, but she's a classic example of isolation in aging where the infrastructure and the services just haven't kept up.
And maybe one more incentive for folks to reconsider where they're living now, maybe consider moving to a different kind of environment, you know.
Or if there's a market, maybe for a free enterprise to come in and try to correct and provide the services in a different way than they have for the typical homeowner.
You know, Phil, in your talk this morning at this conference, you talked about a woman who raised flowers on her front porch. Tell us about that story and what its significance is.
Well, speaking about the importance of relationships and the notion that aging is about place and relationships and not about our obsessive attention to the body. And this is a woman who lived in a typical little neighborhood in Bloomington and in a little bungalow.
Indiana?
In Indiana. Mm-hmm. And lived near the hospital. She maintained a full panoply of flowers and plants on her front porch, but was struggling to get the water from the kitchen, which was in the back of the house, up to the front porch. And a young couple had moved in across the street, and she made herself visible to them, and they introduced themselves to her. And it turns out, actually, he was an EMT, which was, like, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I got an EMT living across the street. And before long, they had worked out an arrangement whereby she would put the empty jugs up on the railing, and that was their cue to come over and fill the jugs for her, bring them back out onto the porch. So it was a win-win situation where young people got to know an old, nice old, interesting old lady, and she got to take care of her plants and maintain her aesthetic, and the people walking by continued to enjoy, you know, the beauty in the neighborhood. So It was a lot of it had to do with the quality of the neighborhood itself, the built environment, the fact that the porch was close to the sidewalk, the fact that she was not afraid to come out on the porch.
Yeah.
It was like her outdoor living room. And through physical design, we can accomplish a lot. And but it also requires a little nerve on people's part to make themselves visible and make themselves available to other people. And I think sometimes people that become isolated get depressed and aren't capable of doing that anymore on their own behalf. So it's a dangerous situation, literally.
Yeah,
there's a movement locally and I think maybe nationally as well called, I think, Community Streets. And Phil tells the story of a small rural community where the city government has now allowed golf carts as a means of transportation.
What a neat idea.
And if, the woman in Overland Park who felt isolated could get in her golf cart and maneuver around to the pharmacy, then she could be better capable. But to put a golf cart on a street in a suburb probably would bring the police pretty fast. So that's just a simple way that we might begin to think differently. Mm.
Just getting benches in the right place so that you can get to a bench and rest and then get back, and it should be an elder-friendly bench as well, with railings on the side. And it ideally should be there should be another bench at a right angle so you could have a face-to-face conversation with somebody. Mm-hmm. Minor things that can be done with a built environment to foster social interaction, because it's the social interaction that leads to those relationships, leads to a sense of belongingness, and reduces fear and reduces crime, literally. Where there are more people in an environment, the less crime there is,
and your
believe
point,
it or not.
Your point, Phil, on elder burbia is just what you said. That's where the focus needs to be, not just on aging and the health of the body. There's so much more to it than that.
Yes, I totally believe that. 70% of the physical decline that people experience in old age is lifestyle related. The suburban lifestyle also presents its own set of problems. In suburbs, people are less likely to walk than in urban environments, so they have higher rates of obesity and higher rates of diabetes.
So getting a car means longer trips, and it's tricky for some folks to drive longer distances and everything
else. Less physical exercise, more money outgoing. It's kind of a vicious cycle.
Back to some phone calls here. Lots of folks want to join us this morning on Up to Date as we talked about the care of our elderly coming forward in the years to come. Lisa from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, good to have you, Lisa.
The timing is just pretty incredible on this. I recently moved here from Chicago and am a longtime gardener, but lived in a rental property where I really couldn't do much gardening. And last year, during that tremendous heat that we had here, I kind of found a niche where I started going over to some folks that I knew that were probably shouldn't be out in this heat, and I was taking care of, watering, and of course that always turns into bending over and weeding here and there. But what it's blossomed into this year is just, I basically call myself the garden girl, and I take care of people's gardens, hanging baskets, whatever they might have, and that's weeding, all kinds of things, because they're just not able to do so. And the pleasure that it brings someone who has been a lifelong gardener or has just enjoyed what the beauty of their lawns and their and their gardens can do for them, the pleasure is just overwhelming. You just never thought that you could bring this much joy to someone who wanted to continue to enjoy, their gardens and their vegetable gardens when they're just not able to do it themselves all the time.
Yeah.
The 1995 Chicago heat wave killed 700 people.
Right.
And the vast majority of those people were elderly, single women who were socially isolated.
Mm. Wow.
And older people who were not socially isolated were much less likely to be affected by it. So it's a stark reminder of the importance of fostering interaction. And our caller is a wonderful example of that.
Great phone call, Lisa. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You bet. Bye-bye. Gloria from Fairway. Gloria, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was calling because I grew up in the country, and I hear a lot of people talk about a dream of moving to the country when they retire. So I just wanted to point out, it is a load of work. I mean, just imagine how big your yard's going to be. And also, you're a long way from doctors, specialists, ambulance, and you might even just have the volunteer fire department. And finally, it can be really lonely in the country, and especially sometimes you lose your mate after moving out, and it's very lonely. So I just wanted to mention that so people concerning it would factor in those things.
Yeah. Thank you for the call, Gloria.
You bet.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go to Sharon from Kansas City, Missouri. Sharon, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to give some examples of some natural occurring retirement communities in our own Kansas City.
Great.
several of our congregations, Metropolitan Missionary Baptist, Palestine, Bethel, have all created homes, built, constructed senior communities around their congregations. And you can see them. They're nice one-story apartments. They're not too high up. They're not high-rises for the most part. I think Metropolitan, I think theirs is more in the townhome style. But they're very nice, keeps people connected to their congregation, which is important to them. I think they were able to buy the homes from a lot of those seniors, and in turn, they were able to use the enough of the monies from acquiring those homes to build these communities. And I think that's, you know, evident right here. So that's my comment.
Well, I'm glad you called, Sharon. Gene, is that a new trend, this notion of congregations building housing nearby for folks to be able to enjoy their church more?
Well, I think there's been a trend for churches, denominations, to build retirement communities, but not so much homes near their own facility. And I think it's something that we have to talk about a lot more, because one of the things that is necessary as a person ages, that is in this 80% of healthy, their spiritual connection is as important of, as their access to health and their lifelong learning. And so I don't think we've talked enough about the role of the faith communities in this particular population, and I think it's going to have to be emphasized.
Phil from Excelsior Springs writes us this: has the decline of church membership and other social engagements led to some of the isolation and lack of social support that we see around the country these days?
Well, I don't know if there is a decline in church membership. Maybe for various denominations it might be, and growth for others. But I think it's a really good question, because I think there are congregations where that have grown old, and for one reason or another are struggling to stay vital and vibrant and attract a younger congregation as well. Sometimes they do that by having two church services, one for young people and one for older people. And there's something about that that just doesn't seem right to me. We ought to look at a kind of more integrative approach to that. But I think it is an important issue, because particularly actually in the African-American population, church membership is very high, and the church is a central feature of life and a very, very significant, important institution beyond just the spiritual as well. So it's a good question.
In the larger congregations, most of us have learned that you need to have a small group. A pastor once said you need to find your cozy pub. And that's where your relationships are built. And you may feel isolated because of the enormity of the congregation when you get together. But you have to have that base of friends that are close and that you can call on an emergency.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about our aging society and what needs to be in place to care for our seniors in the years to come. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. What does the Kansas City area need to do to prepare for the coming wave of seniors? Again, 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. Let's go to Brooke from Overland Park. Brooke, good morning.
Hello. I have been listening with great interest, and just have a couple comments to make.
Sure.
Although I do agree with many of the comments they have made about needing kind of a mixed-use, you know, apartment or townhome-type complex with grocery and pharmacy within reach, moving is very traumatic for especially someone suffering from dementia or someone who's elderly and has a lot of possessions that they're still hanging on to. And I just wanted to make a note and just let you all know that there's lots of different types of care available. Some people think they can't get a caregiver because it may, you know, they think that just means 24-hour care, or maybe it's something that you just do at the end of life, and that's definitely not the case. There's caregivers who can do, like, wake-up, tuck-in service. So if you maybe you're going to be out of town for the week and you need somebody to check on your mom, they can come in and do those types of things, or just fill up their medications for the week so that you know that they're covered for that, or just do errand type things like watering the plants and getting groceries, going to the pharmacy. It's really nice that I think it's been proven, obviously, that seniors who have active relationships live longer and are happier. And even a caregiver coming in that may be, you know, a stay-at-home mom or could be a college student, be in nursing school, it really provides a lot of companionship for them just to talk about current events and talk about maybe what the other person's doing.
Brooke, how do seniors connect with those kinds of services? Where do they go to get information about something like that?
Well, I mean, as the commentator mentioned earlier, there's many types of senior care available in Kansas City. You know, just Googling senior care Kansas City, you'll find a lot of reputable places. And I would just say, you know, to be sure that you don't go anywhere that needs a contract, you know, that says you have to use this many hours this many times a week. Because as we all know, seniors care, their change, your health status does change frequently. Right. And you want to be sure that I think it's much easier to work with a company than to do it on your own. I've had a grandfather with Alzheimer's and dealt with other things. My mom has MS, and doing it on your own sounds great because it does cost you less.
Right.
But if you have someone who is ill or their car breaks down and you still need somebody that's going to be there on time every day when they say they're going to be there, and you want to be sure they've had background checks and all that information. So although I do agree that it would be nice if we could all move to a little area where we had, you know, a lot of things that were convenient, it's just not feasible financially for a lot of people, and emotionally a move is very stressful.
Brooke, I appreciate that phone call. How do folks, Phil, sort of who want to check out these kinds of services, know if a certain service is reputable or not? How do you figure all that out?
Well, for home care agencies and non-medical support agencies, I don't know about Kansas or Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Some states will license non-medical support service agencies, so you can see whether they're licensed or not, and there's some kind of quality maintenance there. Interestingly, around the country, there's been an explosion of groups called villages. It's called the Village Movement, and these are self-organized groups of older adults who are banding together to vet services on their own as one of the things that it does for its membership. It will have a kind of an Angie's List for its membership. It may have 200, 300, 400 members that pay an annual fee. They also may have enough funding to hire a volunteer coordinator to organize volunteer services for people.
Anything like that in Kansas City, Gene, that you're aware of?
Well, we're excited that Chancellor Mark James at the Metropolitan Community Colleges has heard this story from us and attended our presentation this morning. He sees great opportunity for community colleges, in part because of their Health Sciences Institute, where they can become much more aggressive in giving caregivers the kinds of training they need in order to do these things and to get standards and to get licensing. But he's also excited because of the possibilities of lifelong learning for this
mm-hmm.
aging population,
mm-hmm.
or for the opportunities for service for this aging population. So it's great to see his interest and to know that he's aware that there are opportunities for Metropolitan Community Colleges.
You know, Phil, in your book, Elderberbia, you visited the Daily Coffee Club of a small Midwestern town where you joined the Romeos, which mm-hmm. stand for Retired Old Men Eating Out. What did you find out about what makes for a satisfying place as a result of your visit with them?
Well, that's an environment that where sociability dominates. And in a sociable environment, people are relating to each other on an egalitarian basis. All of the values and status differences that we have outside are sort of erased in a sociable environment, and that's what makes it inherently satisfying. And you see those groups all over the place. I mean, every McDonald's every morning, there's a group of Romeos. And there are many more of settings like that. We call them third places than there are senior centers. There are more people going to those kinds of places for their social interaction, if you will, than some of the more formally organized places. And there's a lot, I think, that planners can do to try to build in third places to the mm-hmm. environments that they're creating, which are just gathering places. Usually there's coffee. But these are informal environments where people are not programmed to do anything. They're just there to be able to enjoy each other's company. And that would be an important part of an environment if I were a developer developing a new community.
Hmm. We've talked about purpose and the importance of purpose in this 80% that's not going to be institutionalized. Mark Friedman at Civic Ventures says that this 80% represents America's last untapped natural resource. And we have to pay particular attention on how we can continue to engage them intellectually and physically and spiritually and in all kinds of ways in serving others. A lot of times they say, we miss the kids. Where are the children? Del Webb and all of his retirement villages in Arizona, people moved out because there was an absence of children. Okay, and so there are so many opportunities for us, intergenerational, to take advantage of this and see an opportunity, not just a challenge.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Gentlemen, we're out of time, but thank you very much for your time today. I enjoyed having you both very much. Our guest today, again, Phil Stafford, author of Elderberbia, Aging with a Sense of Place in America, and Gene Wilson, retired from the Kauffman Foundation. Gentlemen, thank you both for your time very much.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. You'll find bios and information about our program and podcasts of our show all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, the politics and possibilities of streetcars in Kansas City. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.